By goodness, you're handsome, Jim. Good morning.
I appreciate the feedback, Huff. You make me feel good. I should have you as my alarm instead of the... Did you look handsome?
It's a nice way to wake
up. I'd like to wake up.
Why don't you ever say that about me?
Because you're not.
You're off the court today. You got the collar on. I haven't seen you.
You look like a toe ball.
Back. At least I was rolling around on the floor, my dog.
Come off it.
She
got on the couch.
Poor old Joey with the sticky tape this morning on your back.
Do you know what I'm happy?
The dog hair off.
Do you know what I'm happy, though? You're not punching a Fanta at 7 o'clock like an 8-year-old boy who's been given his pocket money to go down to the milk bar.
Don't worry, Jim, I thought about this.
The morning's not over, Jim.
Straighten it up, Huff.
Still a chance for the Fanta.
Even Whitey's got a collar on. What's going on here? Do we miss the memo?
Whitey's got meetings.
He's very corporate these days, our man.
Seen a man about a dog.
He's the boss. He's the boss.
One that doesn't lose hair.
Whitey, before we get too deep in a round four, can you give us a current update, please, of what's happening at Augusta National?
Well, they have reached the back nine on Sunday. Hideki Matsuyama's just hitting a tee shot on 11, and he's hit it pretty well.
Centre left, too. Did you see that? Centre
he
left.
He currently has a 5-shot lead. He is 13 under par. Ahead of Will Zalatoris at 8 under, who has finished his 11th hole. Rahm in the clubhouse at 6 under. Xander Schauffele is also at 6 under. And then at 5 under, there is three players: Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, and Mark Leishman.
Go Leish.
And then rounding out the top 10, Cameron Smith.
Yeah. Smith.
Patrick Reed, and also Brian Harman. They're all at 3 under. So that is the top 10 as it stands.
History awaits this morning at the US Masters. We'll see what Hideki can do for us in the last 8 holes of play. Jim, how was your weekend?
It was full of footy, which was great. Took Clown Hands along to his first game of footy, which was fantastic.
For those that don't know, your son referred to as
Clown Hands. My oldest boy is referred to as Clown Hands. His hands don't match his body. They're abnormally large. He's yet to grow into them. They're massive.
Big mitts.
He's got huge mitts and huge feet, but yeah.
I don't know. Okay. So just a reference point for our listeners when you talk about Clan Hands.
Yeah, Clan Hands. He liked it. He wanted to see a bit more action, and I think we'll talk a bit about the Cats. I know Whitey's big on it. He wanted, at 5, he identified a ball use a bit more from the Cats. He wanted more goals, more action, and he wanted to see the forwards kick a few more goals, which I think he was 100% right. Look, they actually did really well defending for the first half Geelong, but their refusal to take the game forward, it just hurts them. You just keep the opposition in the game. And the Ds, they're mature. They've actually got some wind in their sails at the moment. And there's a real confidence about if they can hold the opposition, they just know that they're going to score now.
Well, let's start there, Jim. It's a good little teaser. I love the fact that you've got a 5-year-old identifying ball movement patterns, which is fantastic. In the end, it was the Ds by 25 points, 12-13-85 to the Cats, 9-6-60. You said something there amongst that little interlude that I think is very, very relevant, particularly with the way the game has evolved in 2021. The way that Geelong play, and Clown Hands picked this up beautifully, keeps teams in it. Yes. Even though when they're not playing well, this is what happened last Monday with the Hawks at the MCG. They kept the Hawks in it because they don't score and they try and strangle you a bit. But if you can break through and put a bit of heat on them defensively, you can keep yourself in the game, win games of footy that you probably should never win. Now, Melbourne, I think, should have won that game yesterday. Looked in control for most of it.
Probably by more, to be honest. Yeah. It felt like more at the ground.
So slightly different scenario from that game. But because of the way that they move the ball and defend with the ball, they keep games in it, keep teams in it.
Yeah, and look, Geelong supporters and will go, there's no Cameron, there's no Rowan, there's no Dangerfield. Puff it. As well. But I didn't think it was actually a personnel reason why they didn't take the ball forward. This is not a this year issue. This has been Geelong for the last 3 years, if I'm to be fair. And I find it a bit surprising because, I played a couple of games there at Geelong, and I know the way they train their players and what they actually value is players who win the game in a contest and one-on-one, but then there is even a greater shift to not taking the one-on-one. So in the first quarter, I thought Jake Colajasny, a couple of really good turnovers, high at half-back, Stewart. There was the opportunity. They did find that release. That's all right, finding that next one, a bridge kick to switch the play or take a bit of territory. But even against the Hawks and the Ds yesterday, can you envisage or remember in your mind any times they just took the one-on-one forward?
But so why is it happening? Because it continues to happen, and you hear the players, and they say, we want to move the ball quicker. We do want to move the ball quicker, but it's not happening. So that's what I don't understand. There's two parts to it. It's the fact that they've done it this way for quite some time, but then the players say they don't want to do what they're doing, but they do it.
Yeah, but this is the thing. They did move it quicker, but they went nowhere. So they actually didn't hold on to the ball, but they went lateral, sidewards, around, backwards, sideways, lateral, forward, sideways. So they actually did move it quicker, but with no gain. At some stage, you've got to pull the trigger and go, you know what? You know, he's on the podium for best three contested players inside forward 50. We've got him in our forward line, in Tom Hawkins.
But it's still not answering the question, why are they doing it?
No, it is, because I think in their mind, they are moving the ball quicker. Because I saw a number of players, especially when it came down interchange side, they got it, moved the ball on. But again, it was short, it was wide. That guy went back off the mark, moved it on.
But Jimmy, when they got five goals down the first time, they got back in within 12 points, I think it was, and they looked dangerous just because they were moving the ball quickly and taking some risks. And, gee, Tom Hawkins looked dangerous because he was one out deep.
Surprise.
Then they revert back again.
Watching Geelong, and then you go back to Friday night and you look at the way Port Adelaide played against Richmond. I don't think Geelong create enough chaos ball.
Yeah.
Whether it looks like it's out of control, but it's unpredictable to the opposition. It looks like Geelong are becoming really predictable to the opposition now. So you look yesterday, Melbourne, I don't think ever felt threatened within that game. Like, a little bit at the end of that third quarter, but then they kicked the first two goals of the last quarter, and it's really game over. When teams look at their most dangerous is when it's almost out of control. Mm. When the ball's just flicking around and flying around and you're letting your players play. Players are now good enough to work it out on the run. And I think that's been a bit of a change in Melbourne's game, that they wanted to play this perfect game over previous seasons. And it's like, well, that doesn't work. We need to throw the ball around. We need to let the natural talents, the natural ability of these players come out. Geelong, when a team's chaotic against them, they'll take a mark and you'll see it. It's take the mark, everyone, the hand, slow it down, everyone, slow it down. It's not go straight away when the opposition then are out of position. It's slow it down. Let's get all our stuff. What you spoke about a lot last year. They attack to defend.
No, they defend. Their defense.
Defend with the ball.
They defend with the ball. Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
And they're continually doing that.
They like the game in a methodical speed.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when Cameron comes back, Rowan comes back, and a few others come back.
Danger. Next week.
Dangerfield. You'd like to think he'd play in the midfield.
Stay on target.
But he doesn't. So does that automatically mean they do go quicker? Because my gut feeling is that this problem will still remain, even if their forwards are back, because it's not helping the forwards playing that.
They've got to be allowed to be chaotic.
They're almost too well coached, if you want. Because they are so structural, the way they move the ball, the way they set up, it's fantastic. But what do I end up having? They've got the Kangaroos this week. They'll probably kick 1,000 points there, go back down home, they'll win a couple, and away they go. This has been the story of Geelong for the last 3 years.
But this is the thing. It's not about what's happening now.
I'm not saying that's right.
No. But what you say is right, is that they will do this because it happened last year and it happened the year before. And they'll qualify, but it'll come back to haunt them at some point in the final series, because it has.
Yeah. Look, yesterday they probably got the Oliver-O'Connor matchup wrong.
Well, it worked in the previous 2 weeks. Yeah. It was the logical thing that they would do that.
Well, Petrarca was best on ground. And then there wasn't really a matchup, which I'm surprised about, for Bailey Fridge in that forward line. Yeah, like, there's enough.
Who are they trying?
Stewart could have played on him. Kolodziejczyk could have played on him. They tried to keep
him on McDonald.
Yeah. There's a number of matchups there, but those two guys were clearly the difference. And Max Gawn, he dominates in the ruck.
He was unbelievable, Max Gawn. Look, I know Petrarca was absolutely fantastic, and there was other players, but being live and watching Max Gawn, I love him as a footballer, not because he comes in here, he's RSN zone, but you just watch and you just go, the impact you have on a game, you notice it more so live. I don't think on TV you actually understand the impact Max Gawn has. Like, the way he gets behind the ball, he disrupts defences, it's almost like in basketball terms, when you've got a really good center, how many shots he disrupts, inside forward 50s he disrupts. And I think they've got the balance right now. Jackson getting some maturity. It means Max doesn't have to do full length of the ground sprints. He now just sprints from the back half.
Exhausted by three-quarter time.
Yeah.
Let's have a listen to Simon Goodwin, the coach of the D's, on the win. They're 4-0 for the first time since 1994.
Oh, look, I think due to playing Geelong, you know, they're a high-quality team and they have been for a number of years, and they're a very experienced team. So we certainly knew what we're up against. But, you know, the AFL industry is tough no matter who you play. So to be sitting where we sit, you know, we're happy. There's still things we can improve on. There's no question about that. But I thought today, you know, as a high-quality side, what we're trying to establish in our game was on show, and that was really pleasing.
Things are looking pretty good for the D's. 4-0, start the season, Hawthorn, North Melbourne coming up.
Why are they playing so well, Jimmy? I mean, you mentioned Gawn and the obvious things that to talk about, Oliver and Petraka and whatever else. But there's something different about this Melbourne to previous couple of years.
Yeah, I think I've touched on this before. I think when I've been to a couple of Melbourne's games this year, there's a real maturity about them. And I think, who do we speak to? Maybe Tomo, Adam Tomlinson.
Yes.
And we asked him that, and he said, and I've heard Jake Lever say this, when the opposition kick a few goals, they'd normally panic and spin the magnets and this match up and they'd be finger-pointing, but they're pretty calm, especially behind the ball. And I think they've got their defensive positioning really good. We know Jake Lever loves to get off an intercept, but yesterday I saw him. He was
awesome yesterday.
Yeah, he was take my direct opponent out and then come intercept the ball, which when defenders and mids and even forwards have this understanding of cutting the releases, it gives everyone more time. So it gives the mids a chance to chase and make that high long kick. It gives the backs a chance then to peel off. And I think they've got the cohesion going well between their lines.
Christian Petrarca spoke after the game and he was asked, well, what's going on? And he used the words team and sacrifice and selfless. I haven't heard that for a long time from Melbourne. You know, a lot of times from Melbourne it's been, I'll get my ball, I'll get my numbers, and I'll be happy. But now there's a lot of teamwork, and I think that's the real difference. Now, Petrarca, Oliver have been stars, Gawn's been stars, but there's been other. Like, Jake Lever now looks like the player that Melbourne recruited for the reason of the intercept marking. Ed Langdon looks really good out on the wing
his
there.
His kicking has gone. That's been the difference. Yeah. He's using the ball.
Viney is playing that bull role that we're so used to him playing. Petrarca's now one of the elite midfielders in the competition. Fritch is really damaging. Cozzy Pickett is that small forward that you need. So there's this mentality of team. Now, if Christian Petrarca's saying that outwardly to everybody after a game, there's no doubt it spoke about team, selfless, teamwork, all that sort of stuff internally.
And the thing is that they can bring Ben Brown, a 60-goal goal kicker, into that forward line with a team that's kicking the ball better inside 50 than what they have.
Mm. We'll see where it ends up. 1-300-652-927. Were the D's the most impressive team in round four? Or who was? Your take on it. 1-300-652-927. The D's going well. The Cats are 2-2 and still got some very winnable games coming, as you rightly say, Whitey. So not panic stations just yet. But I do want to hear from Chris Scott, who says after the game, it's not panic stations just yet.
I don't think we're going that well, but I think we're going better than we were this time last year. And you might say we're in a lockdown this time last year, but at this stage of the season, it's a low bar, isn't it? So the upside is we're going better than we were this time last year. We struggled. We took a bit of time to hit our straps last year. And it was. I'm not saying it's the plan. We haven't gone in thinking let's just put ourselves to sleep for the first half of the year and then just get going when it really counts. Unfortunately, the way I'm looking at footy at the moment and have for some time, there aren't many free games out there, if any. And it's just it's hard work every week. And if you allow yourself to get talked into the idea that we're not going that well, we can fall behind really quickly.
Chris Scott.
A mindset thing he's gone down the path of there.
A few gags too, early doors.
Yeah. Bit of humour.
Bit of humour from Chris. So that's the cat situation. Just before we leave that game, there was an incident with Tom Hawkins and Stephen May. Now, the D's.
Clumsy.
The D's confirmed that Stephen May is facing a decent stint on the sidelines to repair a potential fracture of his cheekbone or eye socket after the win against the Cats. Anything to worry about for Tom?
I don't think so. It was clumsy.
Was very clumsy.
No.
Okay. Adam?
No, but it was a bit odd. It was a bit odd.
Very odd.
But... it's clumsy. No doubt about that.
Geelong were 2-2 this time last year, so same as what they are now.
They were playing better footy, I thought, last year.
They had that shock loss to Carlton by a couple of points down in Geelong in round three, and then they beat Melbourne in a really ordinary game. It was 47-44. And again, this is when we were talking about Geelong trying to hold the ball and not go forward and all those sorts of things this time last year. And then they managed to obviously turn it around.
Final part of this, can we judge Geelong without personnel? Really?
No, I don't think it's got anything to do with personnel, Rammer. I think we judge Geelong on the fact that they are set up with that list to be a dominant team, and they're a very experienced team, and we feel with that firepower they should play a more attractive attacking brand of football.
I think Dangerfield takes it forward, but I think they have more of a method issue than a personnel issue.
Geelong and Collingwood are very similar, aren't they? It's methodology.
If this is happening when Dangerfield and Cameron...
But it has been.
But
last year they played this way with Danger.
They made a grand final.
And true.
They were ahead by 15 points at half time.
Yeah, and played slow and got caught playing slow.
As they did the year before in the preliminary final against Richmond.
We're going over old ground here with the Cats. 21 past 7, that's effectively what we're saying here. 2-2, and they've lost they won those two games by 1 and 5 points. Not exactly dominant, the Cats, at the moment. We'll get to a break. There's plenty more to talk about. I wouldn't mind touching on the game yesterday while it's fresh in our memory at Marvel Stadium with the Adelaide Crows. They're going all right. Matty Nix has got them going okay. The Adelaide Crows, I quite like what they're doing. You like the Kangas, Jim. You've spoken about that before. Went fantastic yesterday. And the Saints needed some love across the weekend as well. They were very, very good with their victory. The Blues got the hold of the Gold Coast Suns. We will be chatting to Jeremy Finlayson later on this hour after their enormous win on Saturday night at the MCG. And the Doggies continue their run at the top of the table. It's a very, very interesting ladder after four rounds. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Keep the update from the Masters as well after this on The Breakfast Club.
You've joined The Breakfast Club.
It's a win on the road, so it's huge for our young group to win away from home. They're always ones you look at the start of the season, you know they're going to be tough matchups. A lot of our players haven't played at Marvel before. So from that respect, it's great for reward, but the belief is the biggest part. They believe in themselves at the moment. They trust the work they've done. They embrace the game plan. By no means are we getting it perfect. That's the challenge of becoming a real contender, is to get it right for four quarters. We've got work to do in that area. We know it. We talk about it a lot. We're constantly working each week to improve areas of our game.
That's the voice of Matthew Nix, 26 past 7 on a Monday morning. This is the Monday Footy Review with Jimmy Bartel, triple premiership player, Brownlow medalist, Norm Smith medalist. My goodness, he's handsome. They were very good in the end of the game. The Adelaide Crows, they were trailing, Jim, at three-quarter time by 4 points against the Kangaroos yesterday at Marvel Stadium. They ended up winning that game by 41.
Whew.
We'd like to call that a flurry slate. That was seven, was it? Eight goals, four in the last quarter to one goal, one.
Did your man Texan kick?
The Texan only got the three.
Is he still on target?
He's still on target. What has he got, 21 after four rounds? That's more than on target for the Texan. Oh, he's got 20. I thought he got 21. 20 for Tex, that's more than on target. So we want to see Tex continue the run towards the century of goals. You've had a bit to say about the Kangaroos last couple of weeks, Jim, but the Adelaide Crows, what are you liking about what they're doing at the moment? Because currently, they sit in the eight at 3-1.
Yep, they've picked up where the last 6 weeks of last year, and sometimes you get that momentum from the previous season, and they always say, Rammer, don't they, the last round of the year, if you're not playing finals, but we can take momentum into next year, and you're like, that's garbage, it's 3 months to the next game. But they legitimately have, and I think I've spoken about this before. I like what Matthew Nix did when he went to the Crows. He went, first start off, I'm going to try the tried and true in their positions. They've earned the right. They've been long-standing citizens for the Crowbars. It didn't work, but he didn't toss them all out. All he did was he just moved a lot of the senior players to the periphery, and then he gave the young players the key roles. So, you talk about young Scholl on the wing.
What a game from him yesterday. 31. What did he kick, two? Or kick one, one goal, two.
Beautiful ball user, playing half-back, wing, all that sort of stuff. And these sort of guys, so he's filtering through the midfield. He's giving them opportunities. We saw towards the end of last year and a bit this year, Himmelberg, now he's the key post full forward and doing a little bit of ruck work, and that pushes Tex out to probably his more natural role, which is the leading forward, a second or third forward. So I think what he's doing is it's more games with the younger players taking the senior roles and trying to execute what Matthew Nix is doing. So that's what I really like about him. They're going to go through fluctuations, I think, the Crows, but they're just running on a full steam of confidence at the moment.
The interesting thing about Adelaide is their ability to score, which was one of their real issues through the first part of last season. When you look at their scores through their first four games, 103 against Geelong in a win, 88 in a loss against Sydney, then 95 in a win against Gold Coast, and 109, including 8 goals in the final quarter when the game was up for grabs, against North Melbourne. So that sort of scoring power, and again, we're talking before about methodology, about wanting to be a little bit more aggressive and attacking in the way they use the ball, I think he's holding them in good stead through the first month.
I reckon you've got to kick 13, 14 goals. You've got to plan for that to win.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
If you can't kick 13 or 14...
Got to get to 100.
You're rolling the dice, I reckon.
They'll get to 100 points.
I like Darcy Fogarty's game yesterday. He's a beautiful kick of the football.
Well,
Darcy, isn't he?
There was talk that Fogarty and Tex couldn't play in the same forward line together.
Yes, good point.
Now, no doubt Tex has turned back the clock with the way he's playing, 20 goals over the opening four rounds of the season, but his movement now is a lot better. So Fogarty now can play as that big forward, you know, kick it on top of my head and I'll make it work. I'll push out my opponent or try get it at ground level. What I found most impressive about the Crows yesterday is they were behind at three-quarter time.
Yeah, 4 points.
Yeah, and then they go on and kick 8 goals, 4 in that last quarter and completely dominate North Melbourne. So really disappointing for Melbourne. Melbourne were 2 down. North Melbourne were 2 down. So Zerha and McDonald. Both subs, obviously. Yeah. Is in the game, but again, Lockie Scholl, Schoenberg.
Say their names in a row. Murphy Brown,
McPherson, Rowe, Fogarty, Berry, Hamill.
Butts is a good McAdam, key back.
I like
McHenry, Frampton, Butts. So
Hamill's my man. Just by the way, I'm claiming him.
Names that we don't know yet.
I'd like him to get a bit more of the ball.
But what's good, though, Ramon, when you've got a young side, and Carlton did this last year with their win down at Geelong, there's little key things you want to tick off on the journey, to borrow that reality TV sort of famous line.
Yep.
I'm on my journey. You want to tick off little things with young sides. It's winning interstate. They sort of ticked off too. Being behind at three-quarter time, it's a bit of a character test, and it's good for a coaching staff. Look, I know it's the Kangaroos.
And without their captain.
Yeah, and without the captain. I know it's the Kangaroos, but you still got to have that. So when you come down at three-quarter time as a coach, you're trying to sell it, going, you want to see it works, we can do it. So winning interstate is a big tick. And you just want to have one of those seasons where, well, who haven't we beaten for a while? Can we beat them?
Yeah.
Come to Melbourne and win. The next one will be, can we go to Western, the Eagles Perth. Or Perth, that sort of thing. There's just little things you just want to tick off on the way.
One of the greatest arts of coaching I've always felt is making your players believe. Now, you spoke about the end of last season, which is fine. There's momentum. Hmm. But then how to carry that through a preseason and continue to give your players confidence, particularly when they took some serious beatings from Port Adelaide in those practice matches, and then to come out, win round one against the Cats, 3-1 now. There's no way known I expected Port Adelaide to be in this position.
No.
We're expecting them to be holding up the bottom of the ladder with North Melbourne, but to their credit,
well, it might get a bit better.
They've got Fremantle next week.
Well, let's have a chat to David, and Karen wants to talk about that sort of stuff. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you? I'm not disputing Adelaide's improved, which is great for the game in Adelaide, but their big tests will come in rounds 8, 9, 10 and 11. I looked at it, funnily enough, coincidentally, yesterday, and that's where they could lose all four because they're the four top teams they play, 8, 9, 10 and 11. So it'll depends on what happens then. They could go from chocolates to board lollies, or all of a sudden we might know that, well, they've improved to be a reasonable finals team.
Yeah.
But played no one at this stage, really. Geelong were useless in the first game.
Yeah. Look, David, it's an interesting point, but if you look at their next three, they've got Freo at home, then they've got Hawthorne away down in Tassie, and then they've got the Giants.
Yeah, at home.
Winnable. So,
three winnable games. So I don't think anyone's suggesting that Adelaide can play finals necessarily, But it's more the fact of how quickly it's changed, because they lost their first 13 games under Matthew Nix. So, and that was only last year. So whether that's what, you know, David Noble's coping with at the moment at the Kangaroos, or say Ben Rutten at Essendon, how quickly things can change. Adelaide's a perfect example.
A 7-goal win yesterday. We saw a lot of Matthew Nix and what his message was to the team in the Making the Mark documentary. But again, they win contested footy, they win clearances, they win tackles. He wants them to be defensive, and they're kicking over 100 points, but I think their defensive standards have been what's separated them throughout the year. Everyone will say they're scoring. Yep, Texas kicking goals, and they're doing all that, and they're attacking, but I think they're very sound defensively.
With a no-name defence. Mm-hmm.
Duda's a name, isn't he?
He's got a very impressive name.
He does.
It's a very impressive name. I like it. Now, they're going all right, Dave. I'm not talking premierships and top four just at the moment, but from where they were to where they are, we've seen dramatic and rapid improvement, which is good for business. Let's tell you where else we've seen improvement, and that is with the Western Bulldogs. You were at Mars Stadium on Saturday, Jim.
Yes, Rammer and I went up there.
Both of you were, that's right. Yes, to see that game. Played in Arctic blast conditions.
Horrible conditions.
It's an Arctic blast. Every now and then it happens. Yeah. Arctic blast conditions there. Bulldogs full control most of the afternoon. What are you seeing from the Bulldogs? What are you liking about the Bulldogs, you two?
For me, Rammer, they won a game on probably what was considered a weakness of theirs. Mm-hmm. The big boys came out to play. Tim English was dominant. Norton, he's always impressive to watch. I think it came from all the key positions. Keith was really good down back. Big Stefan in the ruck was fantastic. And it's normally the Dogs' mids who... It's just, we just rave and rave about their mids. They were really good, but I think the big boys came and they dominated proceedings.
The Dogs played the conditions on Saturday. So the Dogs in the first three rounds are up around 450 possessions. They were at 347 on the weekend. Brisbane actually had more of the football.
Lots of uncontested marks, the Lions, yeah, but in nowhere positions.
So that game, you spoke about those the talls in English, Bruce and Norton. I could not believe that Brisbane couldn't work out who was playing on who. The Brisbane key defenders continue to switch and rotate, and that's why English played a good game. There's no doubt about that. He inside forward 50. He kicked three goals, three. So he had six scoring shots. Norton kicked two goals, four, or two goals, five. But they just continued to rotate and rotate. In the third quarter, in a five-minute period of time, Norton, Bruce and English all took contested marks inside the forward 50. And they're almost uncontested.
They took nine between them, English and Norton, and seven of them were inside forward 50.
One of the great features of the Bulldogs now is their unpredictability, because they've got so many players through the midfield that can play in a variety of different roles, but now they've got different forwards that they've all got to worry about. They almost feel like... It almost feels like they've got everything there.
There's a player called Jack McRae. I don't know if anyone knows about him.
The opposition doesn't.
He's actually pretty good.
That was one of his better games, because he had that go-forward sort of nature. He had the good balance between kick and handle. His clearance work, that was as good as I've seen. It wasn't a clearance where Ram is standing flat-footed. I'll quickly give it to you. You'll give it back. He actually drew the tackler and the releasing handball. That player then was able just to actually take away from the stoppage. He was super impressive up there.
Brisbane,
any concerns for Brisbane? Because
I'm concerned with star players who aren't going well. The old Brendan McCartney, if you're having a bad day, don't have a smelly one.
Yep.
They're just in that funk at the moment where some of their star players, when they're having bad days, they're having really, really bad days.
So I want to ask, I mean, the thing with Brisbane is they've had three consecutive away games. So they get back at home for the first time since round one against Sydney. They've got Essendon this week. But I want you two both there. Talk us through Lachie Neale's game.
See, I didn't think Neale was the issue. I thought there was two blokes up forward that were the issue. So Brisbane took 112 marks and Joe Danaher took one. One, and we
a
just
lot across halfback.
Oh yeah, but he didn't come down the line. He didn't compete in the air. He was trying to take mark of the year, jump five deep. He gave away a handful of free kicks. Like, you just, if you're Fagan, you're going, I just need more. And you can probably say to someone at Joe Danaher, who's been 9 years, you can probably say, it's okay to put it on him. I know he, football's not everything for him, but while you're playing the game for 2 hours, you probably just need a bit more, because they were 19 points. And you saw the opposition. You got Norton, Bruce, and English, even Keith. All these guys are just flying for marks in contests, and you're trying to jump four deep from the back, and our mids and halfbacks are screaming out for someone. Can you just stand there in the line and give us an opportunity?
The interesting part.
Eric nearly got blown over. He did. It was that windy.
Yeah, he did.
I thought he was okay, Eric.
Yeah. In second quarter, he was okay. Yeah. The interesting part for Joe and Eric, they sort of both want to be deep a lot at times.
Yeah, they both want the one out the back.
Yeah. So, right at the moment, Hipwood's played as probably the number one man at Brisbane for a couple of years now. Joe's was always that at Essendon, obviously. I don't think they've worked out how each other.
Well, you
got to
throw Charlie Cameron into the mix as well.
He doesn't Charlie plays like, a lot out of full forward.
Yeah, he was the pea in the pod. Yeah. Now he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, he didn't have any influence on the game on the weekend. So they're a little bit dysfunctional in that forward line at the minute.
The reason I ask about Lachie Neale is that
I think he's carrying a little bit.
Do you know what it is? Because he just feels like
back,
he's just...
Back.
A little back fracture or something?
Yeah. He's just travelling. But he's so important to them. And,
well, he's a Brownlow medalist.
No, but I know that. But it's not necessarily the ball he gets. It's the way, particularly around the clearances, he hits the clearance on the move. He's a bit flat-footed at the moment. And I think a lot of the forward line problems potentially are that they're just not getting the ball in there quickly, like some of the other teams are.
And look, there's no doubt he needs to be at their best for Brisbane to be competing at the pointy end. So if he is where he is now, and if he is carrying the injury, maybe he needs a week or two off just to let it heal. Mm. That might maybe the best thing. Maybe it against Essendon this week is the best time to have a little break for him.
But my point I was making with Joe is that one of the reasons why they got Joe in and are looking for another key forward is when the game slows down. So that was always Brisbane's issue. If you could slow them down
up the line,
you'd go, well, we've got them covered up the line. So if you're forward scouting Brisbane when they're flying like last year and the year before, you go, you've just got to slow their ball movement down, because who have they got down the line, or who are they going to bomb it to? But when Brisbane had the game with speed on it, that was their danger, because all their mids would get forward, they'd have speed. Charlie Cameron, work his magic inside forward 50. So you've got to get him in to help with that when the game slows down. And
he doesn't play like that though, Jimmy. He didn't at Essendon. He doesn't. I don't think he will at Brisbane.
But you can't be 100 metres away from the ball.
It shouldn't be.
And Joe just need to sit down and just work it out. How each other's
playing.
Been
working
where
out for 3 months, haven't they?
Well,
isn't that what they've been doing?
Things take
for time.
I actually think Eric's got.
It takes time, I understand.
But they've played four games together.
Yeah,
but I think Eric's got his role. Like the way Hipwood played is the way I expect him to play. He's a really tall half forward flanker.
So are you worried? I'm going to ask you individually. Are you worried about the Brisbane Lions? Emma?
Slightly, yes.
Jim?
Let me see how they go. Back in their own bed, warm weather, got fresh jocks and socks. Up at the Gabatoir.
So they've got Essendon and Carlton. Essendon this week and then Carlton back down here next week.
Let's park it after those
two. Right. Well, okay, let's push back to round six. But after round four, Whitey?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. 19-8. Let's get to a break. Before we do that, a bit of a golf update from the Masters,
What's happened?
It's Monday.
What's happening?
Hideki got very lucky.
The wheel's falling off.
That's very lucky.
Matsuyama is five
in investments
front.
In this room.
Bogey 12, Jim.
12 under Matsuyama. Spieth. And Schauffele and Zalatoris at 7 under, Rahm at 6 under.
Spieth.
Patrick Reed and Spieth are making a sort of a late charge, but that's obviously too late. Although Matsuyama, the last two swings he's put on, would suggest that he's starting to feel the heat.
Chipping for
tightening
eagle.
The
what do you mean? Chipping for eagle.
He's not over yet. It's not
chipping
over
for
yet.
Eagle. What about the leash? How's the leash going?
He just made a birdie, so he's at 6 under as well.
Mm. Oh, no. Let's get the leash home. Let's get him home. That's what we want. Go big in the last day of the Masters, 18-8. We'll get to a break. We'll talk about the Giants after this, then we'll touch base with the Magpies to get Jim's take on that. But the Giants had a big win Saturday night, and Jeremy Finlayson was one of the reasons for Snags. He'll join us on The Breakfast Club.
But that's the thing with him. He doesn't necessarily need to get much of the footy to be a damaging player on the field, and he has his weaknesses. But, gee, if you've got the ball inside 50 and he's got it, you're expecting it to go through.
So, Jim, I want to ask you about the other team that was there on Saturday night.
Okay.
Sort of. The Magpies.
What do you mean, sort of? They were there. Mean to poor Collingwood supporters?
Were they there? What are they? Are they in the position now? Has it got to the point where they have to start to think about what 2021 looks like and play accordingly and build a list accordingly and select accordingly, or is it not quite at that point yet? We talked about Brisbane before.
Yes.
Being probably 2 weeks shy of really assessing them. Is it similar with Collingwood, or does Nathan Buckley, like he spoke about after the game, have to start thinking about what it looks like going forward in black and white?
A bit of both. I heard you gentlemen talking about it on my way in, and it's a bit like we were saying with Geelong. Is it personnel or is it methodology? I think it's more the method first, and then the personnel will help their method. Because to flip that, if they move some players they've already got in that side, like I'd like to see someone like Dacos or that DeGoey just really spit forward at clearances and stop plays, because they've already got Brody Grundy, and I said this last week, I see him as an inside mid. Like, I know he's the ruckman, but the way he plays, he's a butter up inside mid. So you've actually, that's an advantage over other sides, because the way he can win the footy and can win the clearances, which means you can be even more proactive with somebody else. And I think this will help their hit outs to advantage, the clearance numbers, which allows them to play it a bit more in their forward half, because if you have Grundy, Pendlebury, I know Adams is out, but Sire in there. You have four players who love to play the game a metre from the ball. That's their strength. Mm. Like Pendlebury's a genius at it. Taylor Adams is. Sire is, you know, really close to the ball sort of winner. And then you've got Grundy. But if you're the opposition and you're forward scouting, you just ring that.
Ring it, yep.
And you might win it. But if you lose it, you've got them covered in there anyway. You force like a hack kick out there or a hurried exit from stoppages or contested play. So I think the personnel first, actually, that you've got. And then let's start looking at, they've got a pretty good injury list. Start filtering some of these young players through like the Crows did. You know, we mentioned the Crows.
Yep.
You start filtering them through. And then unfortunately, if it gets worse, then you start giving them more responsibility in the side.
So we were talking about this before, that Collingwood, it was only a couple of years ago that they made a grand final and very nearly won a grand final with a similar sort of list to what they've got now, other than the players that they got rid of in the off-season, four players
is a lot.
And all four in their best 15 or 16 players, arguably, or maybe 18.
Yeah, but one of those a couple of those players, you had depth in that position, and then it became a salary cap issue. So, yeah, a couple of those players you moved on played that wing, high, half-forward role, and you had Josh Dacos emerging, probably on a cheaper rate. So I get we go hindsight, we could have kept him, but it still would have been a list management balancing decision anyway.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the right or wrong decision, but my point is that they were part of a 2018 team. Is this now just a new team? Is this a different team? Do they have to head in a different direction? Do they have to play the kids? Or does Nathan Buckley hold on with what he knows to try and go one more year with this group of players? Because he is playing a lot of guys that he was loyal to, that he kind of feels like he's been loyal to what they were doing from back in 2018.
So, Jim, just to highlight that point from Whitey, they're the seventh youngest list, the Magpies.
I didn't think they were old.
They're not old.
But they were the second oldest, or the oldest list on the weekend.
Second most experienced game.
Yeah. So there is that core of young players and inexperienced players in the Magpies, but they're not playing, and they haven't played. I think that's the point with everyone and the assessment of Collingwood at the moment. He's been really loyal, I think it's a good word,
which
Whitey,
to his
established players, the ones that have got him nearly to the top of the mountain a couple of years ago. But they do have some talent underneath. That's what they've done. They've got seventh youngest list, but they're playing the oldest team every week. So there's an imbalance there between energy and youthful exuberance. We're seeing Richmond integrate some young players at the moment. Collingwood aren't doing that.
So my question is, if Nathan Buckley starts to play the kids and they don't get the results, does that affect him coaching them next year? Or is he trying to coach them to get as many wins as he can to try and get it? And now I know that he's selfless, Nathan, and he'll do what's best for the club. But it's all,
he's coaching to play finals.
But I feel that they have got to a point, or Nathan Buckley's got to the point, the football club's got to the point where they go, we might need to make a decision now on playing the kids, which might be a step back, to go with the step back of dumping the players from last year. And then we go, you know what? The pressure's off a little bit. We're starting to go the next generation.
You're changing the expectation. But
that's right.
But I didn't have...
Can Nathan Buckley afford to do that?
But it depends what the expectation was from Collingwood. My expectation of Collingwood wasn't to play finals. So, you can play the kids and you can be a little bit more open with that. But
theirs would have been.
Yeah, theirs would have been. But then it comes back to those great words they use. Was it selection integrity? Yeah, I get you can play young kids, but
if they're not playing well enough,
you can't play them. But that goes for the senior players. Sorry, Rammer. The senior players, if they're not playing well, you can't just keep picking them on reputation.
Stand by, Rammer. Let's have a listen to Nathan Buckley just ahead on that discussion after the game.
You can't get 1-3, and sit on your hands. Like we think we've picked the best sides to get results, and we haven't. So we've got to look at changes, whether that's the way we play, whether we strip things back. The way we prepare or personnel, like there's plenty of things that will be assessed in that regard.
So they've picked the teams that they wanted to win. Ramat, clearly, that's a stupid thing to say, but they thought the players that they put out there were the ones to get the job done. That's not happening at the moment, so now is the time to start looking elsewhere.
Do you think of it differently if Brisbane Lions missed their kick after the siren? So they'd be 2-2.
Yeah.
Is this a completely different conversation?
No, I'm not.
Well, I would hope not.
But we're saying old. So give me an example of an older player at Collingwood that needs to be left out of the team now for a younger player to come in that's capable of playing that role.
Well, they don't have they're an interesting list, full stop. They don't have old players. Well, Scott Pendlebury is their oldest player at 33. Yeah. So Mayne's 32, Greenwood's 32. Both those players played on the weekend. Jeremy Howe's 30, Jordan Ruffhead is 30, Steele Sidebottom's 30, Mason Cox is 30. So they're you're over 30s. And there's four of those that are actually 30 on the dot.
Yeah.
So they're not an old list, but they've got the plus 27s, the plus 26s. That's is a good chunk of their list, and they're all playing. That's effectively what's happened.
I don't think it's a thing about them being the old players. It's players that have been in the team for quite a while that are just going okay.
That's more what I'm getting at.
Yeah. We'll get to that after the 8 o'clock news. Johnny Bowden's going to give us the latest, and we'll get an update from the Masters as well from Johnny, because he's the best at it. And great to have Jimmy Bartel with us on a Monday footy review after round 4 of the AFL. We're going to get to Ross in East Malvern very shortly on the open line, 1-300-652-927. Before we do that, Whitey, a Masters update, please, from Augusta National.
Matsuyama still 13 under, and his lead is 4. So Shuffley also, he's also after 14 holes, he's 9 under, with Zalatoros at 8 under, Spieth 7 under, Rahm 6 under. So Matsuyama in the fairway on 15, which is a par 5. He's 12 under for the par 5s this week. And to be honest, that's why he's leading.
Well, yeah, when you're 13 total, I suppose it is. That's a great stat. 12 under through the par 5, so we'll see what he's got for us on 15 on the last day of the Masters. Let's get to Ross in East Malvern. We were talking about the Magpies gym before the break. He wants to get involved. Hello, Ross.
Yeah, g'day, Half, Whitey, Jim, Rama. It's a great show this morning, as always. I'm a Pies man. I went to the game on Saturday night, and it was probably the same as what I've seen for a long time. You can see that there's a lot of blokes who have a crack and have a dip. And sort of like what Jim was saying is, you guys were saying before, that the list's not that old, but the players that play every week, you kind of know what you're going to get from them. And it's kind of at the point now where it's like, okay, they've got to a grand final. They got within a kick of winning the game within a couple of minutes. But then it's like, you look at it now, and that's 3 years ago. And you look at it now and you think, are those blokes going to take you back there? And you're probably more sort of, been more erring on the side of probably not. So it's a stage now where it's sort of a point for Bucks. Do you play some kids and say, well, we don't know what we're going to get from them. Might be a bit inconsistent, but their best might be a bit better than these blokes that have sort of played really good footy for a long time. Or do we just keep persisting with these same blokes and not really blood any kids? And I think in the last couple of years, obviously with last year being a bit of a strange year, we didn't blood any first-year players last year other than Trey Roscoe. And then this year, we've blooded a couple, but it's probably time to play some kids. Like, it probably reminds me of a time probably about 04, 05, where Malthouse decided, all right, well, I'm going to play guys like Swan and O'Brien and Heath Shaw. I'm going to try them out. There was a few others that didn't quite make it as well, but we're going to see what we're going to get from these blokes. And if they can play, we'll you know, we'll give them a game next week. If not, we'll reassess. But you can't just keep doing the same thing. It's pretty mindless.
It's an interesting point, Ross. You know what you're going to get, Rama. And at the moment, what they're getting, what we are getting as footy fans, the Collingwood supporters, no doubt, is not enough.
So then to Ross, if those kids do come in and they're no good, are you prepared to stay at the bottom of the ladder?
Yeah, I think you have to. But I think you've got to play these kids, especially the ones that we drafted at the end of last year, because we did give up a fair bit in the draft and with the draft hands.
Well, that was that was circumstances, obviously, last year. What you gave up.
Even with and I think the other big thing at Collingwood is obviously Nick Dacos as well. Yeah. Like, we're probably going to have to give up pick one or pick two. I don't think. Or
we've
maybe
almost got enough points for that already.
Hmm. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, but I think we've got to. We've got to be careful because we don't want to lose this year again as another year we can go to the draft when we just end up with one absolute gun as opposed to sort of one gun and a couple of other high end picks. If that comes to fruition, look at what the Dogs did with Dougal Hagan. They might have got him at pick one, but they were able to bring in Treloar and Martin as well. And even though Dougal Hagan hasn't played, you can say, okay, well, the Dogs are a better side based on four games this year than they were after four games last year.
Whereas, that's probably a list management problem as well, a bit bigger than just selection and draft issues for that situation. But I get your point, Ross. It's a fair point.
And the thing Ross is saying, and there's a couple of other text messages as well around, it's the method of Collingwood. And I must confess, watching it on Saturday night, I really did think Collingwood would try and be a little bit more proactive. And it was more of the same. And that's the thing that I think are frustrating a lot of Collingwood supporters. It's more of the same. So, interesting.
Thank you, Ross. Matsuyama has played his second into 15, and he's hit it through the green, through the next fairway, and into the pond at 16. That's a bad result for Hideki fans.
Now,
seems to be a lot of Hideki fans this morning. In this,
Jimmy and Rama and Daniel. St Kilda, how did they turn it around within the game? But also, what did they do differently from the week before where we all were starting to get a little bit worried?
Pressure, intent, effort, nothing to do with skill, nothing to do with the nice, beautiful things that come with football. It was energy and intent. And we spoke about this with Melbourne, cohesion, the selflessness. When players and teams understand that those things, if they're the bedrock, that you actually get a greater opportunity to shine and show your talents. So when St Kilda started to do that, then they all got the ability to shine and show their talents.
Dan Butler was pretty good in the second half.
Well, he hasn't had a big impact in the last couple of weeks, has he, mate Diane?
He's pretty important to them. He just X factor, excitement, hit the scoreboard. So, yeah, he was obviously Big Max was terrific, 5 goals. But when Dan Butler's hitting the scoreboard, 3 goals 2, I think he kicked half.
Dan certainly kicked 3 goals 2.
Yeah, so I thought that was a big. But to Jim's point, pressure, effort, particularly around the contest, but between the arcs now, if you are not providing or demonstrating pressure, it's too easy to pierce through, particularly at Marvel Stadium. You need to continually be pressuring disposal through the middle of the ground, otherwise the ball moves too quickly. In the first half against West Coast, the ball was moving too quickly. Kennedy, Darling, Oscar Allen, it was easy for West Coast. As soon as they started to apply pressure, it allowed the St Kilda defenders then to position themselves a lot better and counterattack the other way.
Yeah, I like it when they bring at least one, maybe two of those smaller forward types up closer to the stoppage in the contest, because they actually got some serious wheels going back towards goal, which one, that's a bonus to help you score. But two, it gives you a greater opportunity to put pressure on, which then gives your backs a better chance. So I think that's a bit of structural stuff, but you need the energy and intent to execute it.
So 5 goals was the difference at halftime, fundamentally, 28 points. And they were able to
they
turn
won by
that
20.
Around.
Got to 33.
Yeah, 33. Yeah.
And then they keep the last 23 points of the third quarter.
Yeah. So
53-point turnaround.
The two parts that, for me, that are interesting your thoughts are, is that what Ratten needed to sort of be able to say, there you go, this is what happens when you do what you need to do. But also, what's Adam Simpson thinking when the pressure got turned up? how West Coast kind of combusted.
Well, for the Brett Ratton point of view, you take a big, oh, phew, because you do it when you're half as a coach, that when you've, you know, you've stripped it all back bare and you've, you know, torn paint off the walls of meetings and you've had things like that. If you don't get a response,
else to go.
You'd be going, oh dear, what do I go in this Monday about?
Yep.
So there's actually probably a great sense of relief from Brett Ratton and the coaching staff, Rammer.
West Coast had 36 inside 50s for the game.
Yeah, it's not enough.
No, that's not counted. So first half, no worries. They're on track. Then they got destroyed through the middle of the ground in that second half. Absolutely destroyed.
Is that a real confidence?
Luke Shuey's a massive
them,
loss.
Or
massive loss. Mm. I will. That, yeah, I agree. Now, Collingwood going over there. Collingwood play well in WA. They always have. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. They might like WA water. Who knows what it is? But they always play well. So West Coast, I don't think necessarily go into this week's game against the Pies confident. But 36 inside 50s with a forward line of Kennedy, Darling, Oscar Allen,
Flying
Ryan. Nah.
Cripps.
You can't win.
Not going to happen. I wouldn't have thought too often. Rowan Marshall's inclusion.
Well, it was a different injury, wasn't it?
He's popped it now, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, but in fact, he was there in the first place. Mm. Helped the Paddy Ryder's in the state. Were you talking about that last week, Paddy
Ryder?
Yeah,
he's back.
He's back in town, so yeah. Hopefully he gets out there and can assist. Pressure and intensity is a funny thing. Like 32 tackles against Essendon, and they had 120 less disposals, so they should have been tackling a whole lot more. On the weekend, they had 69 tackles, and they had 80 more disposals.
Yeah, plus.
So
it gets you closer.
Odd contested footy.
Yeah.
So sometimes when You play
right back.
Yeah. Sometimes when you play the game, you think you're getting close to the contest, but you get the best seat in the house. You're a metre from the contest too far, and you're just running along up and down the ground watching from the best seats in the house.
Yeah.
When you actually when you put like a tackling focus, it actually gets you closer to the contest. It's like a cue in your head where I got to get close enough to tackle, which actually gets you in a great position to win the ball as well.
Yep.
The one key stat that Brett Ratton will highlight throughout the week is tackles inside 450. You talk about those small guys because that's how they're set up. They've got bigs, then they've got smalls. 18 tackles inside 450 to 6.
That's a lot.
You talk about tackles. Brad Cratch had 12 on his own.
Bobby Boucher.
To go with his 15 contested possessions and 26 disposals overall, and he'll be with us tomorrow morning. Daniel.
Looking forward to chatting to Brad about that. Port Adelaide had a great win on Friday night when Ramo won the face-off. But it came at a cost.
Big cost.
It came at a cost. Dersma
and Butters
both out for extended periods of time.
6 weekers.
Yeah. How big a blow is that? I mean, we're talking about teams at top of the tree here and the best teams in footy, hoping to lock in top 4 spots. And Port Adelaide would want to have one of those spots.
And you can probably throw Fantasia into that also with the ankle.
A ruptured.
So that's their speed. That's their excitement. That's their X factor. So Port Adelaide, I thought, out Richmond on Friday night. If you get they played the chaotic game. And without those, particularly those three guys, they're their runners. They're their excitement. They're their unpredictability. Now, who comes in for those sort of guys?
Probably Bonner would be one that come in who's been in and out of the side. They got some depth on their list at the moment. The Port Adelaide pair, but you can't replace that sort of class.
And they're long injuries, particularly the two Dersma and Butters.
Well, let's just say they miss 5. Their next 5: Carlton away, St Kilda at home, Brisbane away, the Showdown, and then they've got the Bulldogs.
Ooh, some fitties.
Yeah. So not
tiebreaker
really,
games, Whitey. Tiebreakers.
Not really the right time to have those players out of the side.
Never a good time.
They look terrific. Their cult figure in Lockie Jones the look of him just is outstanding with the moustache and the sort of the mullet.
He's a big dude, isn't he? Yeah. Thick dude.
He was like you in under 12. you'd relate to that. You were that big, weren't you?
You're an idiot, mate.
Having seen him at 13, he was pretty much that's what he was.
The answer's correct. It's not important right now. Not important right now.
But the one key for Port Adelaide that's really changed them is Alirelia. So it allows Jonas and Cleary to play their natural roles now on... Yep. Sort of, they don't have to play on the big guys.
But they're also a real defend-first type defenders, and O'Leary is watch the ball, go the ball, defend.
Intercept mark. Yeah. He can play on whatever's down there almost.
Give it to Gary Ayres, the tools and the smalls. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're going to rock. Well, the Tigers, I mean, another minute, they probably win that game. Yeah. They were coming thick and fast. Are you concerned about the Tigers? They're sitting below Carlton on the ladder for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, give me their win-loss record in every premiership year at about 10 games. They've normally been fitty-fitty.
4-0 the first two, and then they were 2-2 similar to this in the last one.
It's right.
Just interesting to see what they do with personnel over the next couple of weeks.
As I mentioned before, there's a couple of kids getting a look, which we haven't seen from the Tigers of recent times.
But they did that when they had a lot of injuries when they won the middle premiership.
What were they last year? What, five?
Like Ross
five?
And Stack and all them coming
they,
to the
they
side.
Had more injuries than what they kind of do at the moment. They've got a couple now. They've got St Kilda and Melbourne in their next two, and then they've got the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
It's a good little weeks. Test for them.
We'll find out a bit.
And then Geelong.
Oh, 4 weeks.
Mm. Oh, boy.
Not playing great footy. Not playing poor footy, but not playing great footy with that four in the next. And I reckon we'll find out a lot about Richmond on Thursday night against St Kilda, because St Kilda kind of troubled them a bit.
Where's the game at?
Road game down at Marvel.
No, but that's a big thing. Like,
no, it's at Marvel.
Yeah, they're interstate trip.
They'll like that.
They will like that. St Kilda will love that, yes. St Kilda on the MCG.
That's a tough run, St Kilda, Melbourne, Bulldogs, Geelong.
I reckon, no, they'll be fine.
So what would you expect Richmond out of those four to go?
3-1.
That'll be 4-4.
4-4?
4-4. Yeah. The Blues had a win over the Suns on Saturday night at Metricon Stadium. Blues needed the win, clearly. What are you going to say?
I don't think that loss should be glossed over, and I know we don't really have time for it now. I think that was a really impressive win, considering the players that Carlton had out. And Cripps didn't dominate.
Well, I could have rucked for Gold Coast, though. They were out.
Yeah, but that still was a good win, I reckon, for Carlton.
I'm with you. I think it was a good win and an important one. Put some 2-2.
Important win.
Yep. Yeah, not so much a great win.
Yeah, that's right.
An important win.
Yeah. Keeps the Wolves from the door.
It was a win.
Have we got the...
We got Port Adelaide this week, so...
I think that's all they needed, though, was a win.
Yeah.
1-3 going into Port Adelaide is different to 2-2 Port Adelaide.
Correct.
We've got the prognosis on Jack Silvani and his shoulder.
No, nothing yet.
That was outstanding. That little bit of pressure in the last quarter to lay that tackle. He hurt himself, obviously, again with that shoulder. It was a big play in the game.
Hey, Matsuyama's lead now is 2.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. It's 2.
A little bit of vomit.
It's okay.
It's a little bit of vomit.
Matsuyama 12, Schauffele 10, both in the final group.
I think his voice is breaking.
I've since learned there was a cash out taken.
Oh, wow.
95%. Why wouldn't you?
That's coward's play.
23 past 8.
You're a coward.
Yeah, the boys.
Across this sporting state, RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
Great to have Jimmy Bartel with us. Monday footy review every week around about, from 7 o'clock on the program for the round of footy that's just gone. And looks like Hideki might survive. He's two shots up. Xander's hit into the water on 16, which is a setback for Xander fans.
Hideki's voice is breaking.
Hideki is white. He's taking the break. Looks like he's seen a ghost. He's pale at the moment. He's just vomiting a little bit on that lovely crisp shirt of his. We were going to do our top eights today, but we had a pre-show meeting and said round six would be the window. That's why we gave the Brisbane Lions a couple of weeks. We gave the Magpies a couple of weeks. We want to see more. We want to see a bigger sample size. Round six is when we'll redo our top eights, Jim. That's what we've decided.
I like it.
Today, what do you got for us, Jim, to finish off?
Well, Sunday night is normally the investigative journalists do their best work, and I was taking the dog for a walk this morning along the beach and just saw something happening, a guy digging the sand, but you know what?
But we've found it.
The most explosive 60 minutes of the year.
Yeah, Kenzie and I found a report being buried down at Port Melbourne Beach.
What have you done?
It's the sort of can you fix it report, because we haven't gone do better. But can you just sort of fix it in world sport? We have an Australian government official in the sporting department. It just said, look, we've got to straighten up some sporting events, some things that have been going on in the sporting world. And
what's happened?
Well, I read it. I dusted off the sand and everything like that. And here's some of the big findings that have come out of the sort of can you fix it report. It's not hard hitting, but can you just fix it while you're at it?
This is unusual.
They've decided to put a real emphasis, and they're targeting cricketers who are holding the bat incorrectly when they're making a ton. No more showing the roofs to the fans. It's the flats
it's got flats.
And it's no upside down like Hughes from Sydney does. Doesn't need to be corporate. If you make 100, It show the flats to the crowd.
And upside down flats too.
And upside down flats.
Well, this is a bugbear of your mate Adam over there.
Yeah, it's a bugbear of both of us. Look, I'll keep moving and you can contribute because it's a big report. It's 20 pages deep and I've just taken the key points out of it. Umpires wearing the same colour as AFL teams.
Ridiculous.
Oh, how annoying was that yesterday?
Can you sort of fix that while you're at it?
Yeah, good point, Jim. I like where this is going.
The Adelaide, like the Adelaide jumper, particularly Shane McAdam, the long sleeves.
Long sleeve. Yellow arms.
No one in the future to wear red on the last day of a major. Can you fix that in honour of Tiger Woods and what he's done
for
the game?
So you want to hang up the red shirt?
Just the four majors, no red shirt wearing on the last
Sunday.
Day. On
you
want
to hang up the red shirt?
What he's done for the game, golf wouldn't be where it is and we wouldn't be watching it the way we do if it wasn't for Tiger. Can you fix, we don't like tennis players helping the opposition warm up. It's one of the most unique things I've ever seen in sport. I still don't understand it when I watch tennis.
When you think about it,
it'd be like Darcy Morgan to Toby Green. You want to just do some body work before we get you? I can sort of help you here. And Braden Maynard going, next time just move around a little bit and you might get that next mark.
Glenn McGrath giving Andrew Strauss 20 balls in the nets or in the centre wicket practice prior to the first day's play of the test.
Your weekend cyclist blocking cafes just to drink water. Can we just, the mammals, can you just move on? Especially with today's numbers and,
They're having a latte, mate. They're often latteing, short blacking, the cyclists. You leave them alone. I'm on their side there.
Take your latte and get stuffed. You're taking up too much space.
Well, keep your kids out of my bloody cafe, mate.
Yeah, I just want to eat. 7:50 or 8:10 starts on a Friday night for football. Can you sort of fix that?
Well, one thing that they need to do, there was no reason for the Gold Coast Carlton game to start at the same time as the Collingwood Giants game. Especially with the hour of time difference.
Look, Better Homes and Gardens.
On different times.
Was it our, we're on the same times, aren't we?
No, because... we are. But you should still be able to have a half hour difference. Well, minimum.
Yeah, so, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the time difference.
So 8:10, they're going to start this week. And so it'll be like pretty much midnight by the time we start.
In Perth.
It'll be an 8:10 start on the TV.
At least I get to watch Better Homes and Gardens for a little bit.
That's garbage. Now. You don't want to watch Better Homes and Gardens.
I love that show.
No, you do not.
I do.
Don't lie. Your name is Lie.
I do think that's
why he needs to start watching.
I do
that
think
again.
That's one of the issues. Well, it's not an issue as such, but the AFL need to be better with their timings of things.
Yep.
More standalone games. I think Mark Robinson's spoken about that.
And the last one, and just a bit of a just for life in general. Don't walk four wide on the footpath unless you're in a boy band. Like, you're not filming a film clip for a music.
No, fair point.
Don't walk four wide. Two and two, you see someone coming, pair up.
Yep.
Get the file going, not four wide, and don't walk slow. Slow walkers.
Can you have a chat to my wife? She's a slow walker.
Slow walkers and four wide.
Annoys me, the slow walker.
So, like I was saying, it's not hard hitting, but just can you fix it while you're at it?
I'm okay with that. Let's fix that stuff, and we'll make sure by next Monday, Jim, it is all under control.